Hello, everybody. It's Weekly Manga Recap time.
That enthusiasm's a little too high, Nick. Can you tone this down a bit?
No. We're in a world without Daniel Bryan, Chris. What's the point of being enthusiastic about anything?
He's not dead.
He's not dead. No.
As a longtime wrestling fan, I'm like, oh, this wrestler is no longer wrestling, but he's still alive. This is a blessing. He's not insane or a heroin addict.
They stopped him from wrestling before his permanent damage was done to his brain that he will never recover from.
Yeah. I'm a big Kurt Angle fan, Nick. You think I don't wish that Kurt Angle retired 7 years ago before he could just go insane? If I could have that, I would. Are you doing all right, Nick? Do you need
The way I put it on Twitter was that the entire time that this has been circulating the news, my eyes have been dry, but my soul has been weeping. Like, it's
very poetic.
I'm very upset about this. Like, I kind of suspected it. I think we all suspected deep down it's going to happen. But it's like, oh no!
One more match.
No, I don't want that either.
To start screaming at him on the street. No, one more match, big shithead.
Apparently, the reason why he was, going around telling everybody, oh no, I can totally still wrestle, was because he had no idea how much damage to his brain all the concussions had caused. And then they were like, yeah, this is why. And he was like, oh, I should retire. I don't want to forget my name before I'm 40. Like, it's...
Yeah, you come up with a better name than Bryan Danielson, though. I mean, that's the plus side. You come up with something more interesting.
It is kind of amazing that they took the laziest option of just switching his name around a little bit.
What's his
name?
And
it is a better name.
Bryan Danielson. Why don't we just call him like Daniel Bryan? Who cares? This guy's going to be in and out of this company anyway. It's not like we're going to make him a big thing.
He's going to be gone in like 2 months. What the hell?
I mean, imagine if he had come, two years later, they'd just be calling him Bryan. There'd be no Daniel. You got to drop it. Daniel doesn't sound like a tough guy's name.
You can't have someone named Daniel. Put that Daniel alongside the Alexander and Langston and Antonio and Adrian. Non-wrestling fans are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Vince McMahon hates two names, apparently. You can't have a first and last name, apparently, if you're a wrestler anymore. It's weird.
Yeah, I guess it's branding. He's like, well, anybody could be Antonio Cesaro, only one person could be Cesaro. Which seems like it'd be the opposite.
Maybe somewhere we're gonna find out that Ryback used to be called Jarvis Ryback or some shit like that. Anyway, one of my favorite wrestlers retired and made me sad. It's actually probably the first time that I've actually really had to deal with that. Because it was different with CM Punk, who was just like, fuck everything.
It was just like, this pisses me off to no end.
Fuck you. Fuck you, Triple H. Fuck you, Vince McMahon. And fuck you, Ryback, you dangerous monster.
Although Daniel Bryan was very kind to him.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, that was the weirdest thing about Punk's departure, was if he did like people, he was sure to say nice things about them. Which is like one of those things where it's like John Cena's impenetrable aura of is actually a good person came up. The biggest jerk on the planet was like, actually, no, I like John.
Yeah, he's great.
But anyway, yeah. First time that like a wrestler retired and then had a big emotional I can't wrestle anymore speech that I actually cared about. Because I was watching wrestling when Edge did it, but I was like, I don't know who this is.
You're smiling the whole time like...
Everyone's like, I can't believe you had to retire so young. I'm like, he was almost 40.
Yeah, what a weirdo. Daniel Bryan's only 32. He's had enough concussions to make Junior Seau blush. Well, he's dead, but if he was still alive, he'd be blushing.
Let's not get into concussions football players and stuff, because then we'll get really upset.
Well, unless you're Cam Newton, then in which case you're never going to get a concussion because you won't even go after the football.
Then you're just going to go.
You're like, oh shit, I fumbled. I'm just going to back away from this one.
I like how people were like, oh, Cam Newton, what a sore loser. Or, oh no, Cam Newton, no, he's just young and immature, he hasn't matured, he doesn't compare yet. You're just like, fuck Cam Newton.
I'm like, Cam Newton's been this way since he got into the league. Do y'all forget, like, the first 2 years he was in the league, and if the team started losing a game really badly, he'd just sit on the sidelines with a towel over his head and sulk?
I'm actually waiting for Stephen A. Smith to somehow spin this into being racist again, because that's always fun when it comes to gambling.
Yeah.
Not to bring up, you know, race relations in sports again, but I swear to God, Stephen A. Smith needs to just stop talking. Like, he's such an idiot.
Do we have to put the A in his name? Does he demand it? Stephen A. Smith? Can I just
it's
call
branding! He doesn't want Vince McMahon to take away his other two names.
He's like, I have three names, so I'm going to keep them.
Ah, we can't. That'll never fly. We'll just call him Smith! No, wait. A.
It's Stephen A. Smith, yeah. It's very compelling.
Anyway, we're here to talk about manga. I guess we could just, you know, we are safe to talk, to go on about something not related for 10 minutes this time, because we have no series to talk about, no recommended series. We're just going to go right into the recap portion of the manga recap. In, unfortunately, what in my opinion was a fairly weak week in manga. But yeah, let's start things off with Black Clover, page 48. Key! So, last time Yami had deflected a bunch of leashes. I'm still never gonna get that, I'm sorry. A bunch of leashes. It's even harder when you try to do possessive on it.
Leashes.
Leashes. Attacks. And even seemed to deflect them when he didn't actually see them coming. And then he launched this giant dark slash at leashes. And then he turned to Asta and said, you know, you tried doing it. And Asta was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And this chapter was up with Yami grabbing Asta by the skull and saying, if I say do it, then you do it. This guy's suddenly very scary. Like, I don't know about him anymore. I don't think he should be allowed to be around adolescents anymore.
My brother used to do that to me. Not, like, hold me up by my head, but he used to just grab me by the skull and squeeze. Like, as one of, like, his, you know, ways of being like, stop being fucking annoying.
Wow.
So, I think of it like a big brother sort of thing. Now, if he was just drinking a lot, he'd be my brother to a T, almost. Well, I mean, make him fatter and a bigger nose. But then, yeah, he'd basically be my brother.
This is the Super Hilarious Brothers podcast.
I'm just here to shit on him whenever chance I get. He can't come back at me here. And this will never get back to me. He's never going to listen to Weekly Manga Recap.
Well, you fucking dorky Japanese comic, whatever.
Yeah.
So, Leash does have this very small wound on his cheek. So he uses recovery magic, which takes Asta by surprise.
Are we still sure if it's a guy?
I'm just assuming male at this point until eventually maybe we'll get corrected. They're tied off guard because he was using attack magic earlier, but he can also use recovery magic. So they're like, but Yami says, well, I've heard that people loved by mana are able to use all sorts of magic types. Which sounds kind of strange to me. This actually caught me off guard when the first time I was reading it, because when Leash was giving his backstory and talked about, oh, you know, my people were loved by mana, I thought he was, like, being metaphorical, like we were just blessed with really strong magic. But apparently that's a common term, so.
Well, I thought we've heard of that before. Not literally, like, mana is a personification that has sentimental, like, a sentient feeling that has, like, attitudes towards particular people, but just when somebody's particularly skilled and has a lot of mana, they're called, like, loved by mana or whatever. Because I thought it wasn't, what is his name? The rock guy, or not rock guy, the diamond guy or whatever that they fought back in that one dungeon.
I don't remember that expression coming up, because they established...
I don't know if they said specifically that phrase, but I thought he was supposed to be, like, the same sort of thing, because he could use two different kinds of magic, too. He had a defensive magic and an attack magic.
Well, that was because
I'm trying to remember it, and I'm probably very wrong, but...
That was because his friend from the fighting pits had, like, given her magic to him, though.
That is true. So you remember more than I do. Nick, I think you're loved by mana. I give you a compliment. Fuck you. Are you trying to cast magic?
Yes.
You didn't say any spells or incantations. How's it supposed to work? You don't have a grimoire? You don't have a wand?
No.
What kind of Potterhead are you supposed to be? oh, now it's Nick's time to get the props out. I feel so unique. Normally it's just... Well, that's more trigger. There's no magic in that. Stupid. Right. It's science.
It's science.
Unless you're channeling on Lisa powers, because that would work, talking about World Trigger during Black Clover.
Okay. Anywho, Yami is not telling Asta to do his slash attack thing, and which he explains while deflecting more attacks from Leashed, which I like. Because he's like, you know, talking to Asta over his shoulder while still deflecting stuff. And he explains that there is something called Ki, which allows him to react to attacks because he feels them. And, yeah, it's like, oh, you know, if you look at people around you, you know, like, you know, the sound of their breathing, their smell, the motions of their muscles, the vague sense that they're there, that's Ki, the blanket term for all the different types of life energy the human body releases. And then he demonstrates the Kamehameha wave so that Asta can learn it. This is just kind of a weird thing to me to have this... Because, you know, it was established that Yami is essentially from Japan, or the equivalent of Japan. That's why he's got, you know, a Japanese name, for example, and
Japanese-style sword.
Yeah, exactly. But... I don't know, it's weird that there's suddenly like, yes, you know, Ki, that, you know, thing that shows up in all of your, you know, normal Japanese-themed battle manga and stuff. It was just kind of weird. Because when we're in this very European fantasy thing. Although it is kind of cool, too, because it's sort of like one of those things that kind of comes up in, like, Dungeons & Dragons, where it's like, everything is supposed to be, like, you know, Western European theme, but it's like, fuck it, I want to play a samurai.
Yeah, and then there's samurai and ninjas in there, and they're just like, eh, it's a very eclectic culture.
Right.
You can just go over to Japanese town. There's one Japanese town in every D&D world.
And, Yami explains that, look, you know, I use ki, I can predict attacks like this, and I combine this with magic and muscle and fight that way. It's kind of like being a magic swordsman. So, presumably then, Asta is going to inherit a lot of this style, considering he fights with a sword and has a lot of physical strength. So, Valtos, the spatial magic user allied with Leashed, offers to assist. And so, he tries to launch an attack at Asta, and Yami deflects it. And, yeah, so Yami's just like, okay, yeah, you should practice that technique on that scrawny guy with the weird eyes. And Asta says, well, there's no way that I can do this. And Yami says, where I come from, we've got the saying, a warrior never breaks his word. You said you're going to be the Wizard King. Well, you should surpass your limits right here and right now. There's no other way. Well, there is, actually, but...
In this case, yeah.
But there's one way to motivate Asta, is to say, like, you want to be Hokage Wizard King, right? You know, so.
You know what the Wizard King would do? He'd totally learn Ki and block this attack. You know what the Wizard King would do? He'd totally get me another beer so I don't have to get up. The Wizard King would do that? I'll get you four beers!
So Asta tries and fails to deflect the first attack, and now he's like, no, you did it wrong. No, you just tried to listen to it. You must use all five of your senses and concentrate. And the very second time that he tries to do it, he manages to successfully deflect an attack using Ki. Good job, Asta! You really tried hard to learn that.
It was a tough road. He had to go through a lot of turmoil.
It was a very long
journey. Some friends fell along the way, but it was a real three-act structure. By the end, he's grown.
You really had to try hard. You had to go on this whole entire training arc. You know, lots of montages were involved. You missed a lot of important fights because you were trying so hard in order to learn this technique. Mm. Anyway, when he does this, he deflects the attack that comes through before, and it directly hits Valtos. And so Leash gets really pissed off about this, and there's this actually really cool panel where his eyes are, like, really wide and most of his face is in shadow and stuff, and he's just like, how dare you? He mends his light magic into this whip, basically, and essentially starts bringing the cavern down on top of them. He's lashing out at them and they're deflecting it, but he's also, you know, cutting down a whole bunch of stalactites from the ceiling, and he buries them underneath the rubble. But then they just burst out of it.
Yeah. I mean, they're magic swordsmen. What do they care?
And, you know, he's just like, see, if you concentrate like that, you could pick up on the key of natural objects, too. Then you'll never die from falling rocks and stuff.
Hooray, key is awesome. Hooray for key.
That was... S's line right there is basically the chapter. Key is awesome. Hooray for key.
It's a really good encapsulation of the series as a whole, generally. It's just very excitable and happy.
I did not care for this chapter very much, honestly. It really feels like things are coming too easily for the good guys at this juncture, and I feel like there really needs to be a harsh, you know, fall back to reality moment in the next chapter, because our main villain is kind of being made a fool of right now, and has to just like, oh yeah, that was easy learning that technique. Okay, so Asta got another bullshit power-up. Okay, good, with no effort. So the first time he just, you know, yanked a new sword out of his grimoire, which he can do at will and then not do at will. I don't know. And now he just like, oh, learning to see other attacks coming? Let me try. Okay, I did it. Like, this annoyed me. It greatly annoyed me. I would be fine if Yami had demonstrated this ability and explained it a little bit, but I don't think that they should have ever gone past the point of Asta almost deflecting the first attack. The fact that he completely took out one of... Well, not completely took out, but basically incapacitated Leash's follower, whose name I've already forgotten. Baltos.
I was really bugged sword on, and I was like, that's something different, isn't it?
really, really bugged me. So, I did not care much for this chapter.
I thought I was going to have the unpopular opinion this week, but I wasn't crazy on this chapter either. For similar reasons as yours, though, I think my main issue is I wish we hadn't seen this much of Leashed. I was kind of wishing... that he had teleported away at the beginning of this chapter or the end of last one, just kind of left there. Because I feel like we're getting a little bit too much of him right now. And as a byproduct of that, he's starting to lose a little bit of his mystique. Like, the fact that he seemed very cool and elegant and confident when he first showed up, very mysterious. And it was completely fine having Yami show up and block his attacks and have something that, you know, to kind of combat him there. But now we're also seeing him when he's driven too far. We're seeing him when he kind of loses control. I kind of just want to save that for later because I feel like it's taking away a little bit of the hype I had for him, for us to see this much of him thus far. I'm not saying it's necessarily a you know, an inherent problem of the series. It's more of a personal preference. I kind of wish he'd leave and we'd get away from this juncture.
It's too much from both Asta and from him all at once. Yay!
I think the whole key thing actually might have been more effective if it had been something Yami taught him back at, like, the Black Bull's base or something like that. Where Asta learning it quickly doesn't necessarily impede anyone else's progress. Because kind of learning it here comes a little bit at the expense of the villains. Whereas if he learned it back at the base, maybe it's a training arc or something like that, it doesn't have a negative impact on anything, really.
I'm trying to remember, did they send Sally back?
She was hurt, but I can't remember if they actively teleported her back or not. They probably did, if they haven't shown her. But I'm not 100% certain.
Because, yeah, if they haven't, then for a guy who supposedly cares about his followers so much, Leash is not really paying much attention to that.
I imagine he did. I'm completely admitting I don't remember. I would assume so, though. If she wasn't teleported back, I assume it's the completely innocent mistake of the author to not have shown it.
Okay. Well,
now moving on to a chapter that's
totally brilliant. Yeah. Okay, so last time, when confronted by Hochwald about the fact that you're totally not loyal to the Quincy's, Ishida was like, all right, Mr. All-Seeing Future Vision Guy, I'm going to blow a hole in the ground and send Ichigo and friends under it and then follow after them, and then, when we're on the floor below you, then I will reveal that I am a mole and you won't see it coming with your future vision. And then Hochwald showed up and was like, yeah, I knew you were going to do that.
You know what my power is? I've told you it. Yeah. I just re-explained it to you, like, last chapter, too.
Yeah. So, Hashima's confronting them, and Ishida's like, Ichigo, you must go to the Sun Gate and escape. And Hashima said, I told you! Future! See ya!
What was that Hashima voice? It was like Mr. T for a moment. I'm Tateful, I'm telling you! I all can see the future! I ain't getting on no plane!
I don't think I can do justice to Mr. T impression, so I'm not going to try with Hochwald. But yeah,
I feel like mine wasn't half bad right there. I mean, I found my new calling in life. I'm a Mr. T impersonator, except physically, in any way, shape, or form. Except I'm not tall, or ripped, or with a mohawk, or black. I guess that's the big one.
I think it's the mohawk, honestly.
They're like, I could probably run the side, yeah.
So Hochwald says, I knew how you were going to respond when I put you on the spot. I can see the future. So I destroyed the Sun Gate that leads to the living world. Because I knew what your plan was.
Aw, bummer.
And she is like, oh no. So Hochwald starts, you know, summoning all this darkness around himself. And he says, let's finish this before His Majesty wakes up.
And someone brought up a good point, Nick. I am Rollo T. He is Mr. T. Perhaps we're long-distantly separated twins. You know, just like twins separated by like 20 or so years from different mothers. Spiritual twins.
So, Ichigo's like, all right, let's find him, Ryu. And she is like, wait a minute. Hochwald has his powers when Juha Bak is asleep. Hamster wheel goes. Wait a minute! Ichigo, you have noticed that Hochwald has the same eyes as Juha Bak, right? Yeah? His power is switched to Juha Bak's only when Juha Bak is asleep. Which means right now, Juha Bak doesn't have the power of omniscience and omnipotence! Yeah?
Yeah, but he has it, so, like, it's still not really...
No! It means... Wait, hang on, I had this.
Oh, he, like, takes out an abacus. I need a protractor.
He goes into his room and starts, like, he does the thing with the thumbtacks and the strings across the map.
You just see him with, like, a pencil in his mouth typing furiously on a computer, like, three screens, like, huh?
He's
wait a minute, you're a buck, and he has his powers right now.
Which means you can go kill him.
As he comes back to a charred soul society with just a bunch of skeletons, like with a... Guys, I figured out you're a buck, but he doesn't have his power. Oh. I'll just leave this here if you guys want to check that out.
If only they'd been able to hold out for 3 weeks while I was figuring out this conundrum. Ishida says, I'll hold up Hochwald while you go and kill Ichigo. Go kill Juha Bak, basically. And Ishida says, what, really? You're going to stay here? And she says, go! Those won't be my last words. Which is where we get our title drop, My Last Words, Chapter 661. So yeah. Hochwald, the guy who has been predicting Ishida would betray them all and was totally right, even without his future vision powers, because seriously, who the fuck would believe that this guy would actually... God damn it! So, they're gonna square off. Ishida... Because Hochwald just, like, lets them go, and she says, what, you're not even going to bother chasing them? What's going on there? And Hochwald says, I told you! I can see everything!
What? How do you not get this yet?
I know it's not necessary for me to go after them, so I'm not bothering. And she just says, okay, but the future gave me change. Okay, maybe if you brought this point up the very first time Oswald mentioned he had future vision. But no, you're waiting until now, just like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, fuck you, I guess.
Ishida has gone from, like, the top of the most intelligent Bleach characters list to the bottom, or something like that, in these last several chapters. How stupid is this guy?
I mean, I guess he's just playing into the idea, like, you know, you can't truly see the future. But it just seems like his plan was just really ill-conceived.
Like, yeah, even if Oswald could not see the future and knew everything, he still did nothing to prove his loyalty. Oh, I shot arrows at Ichigo that one time, which totally had no chance of harming him.
You can't think I'm good guy secretly, though.
Yeah, how many people did you kill during the invasions of Soul Society?
None, and I seemed really resistant to the whole idea from the very beginning.
Like a loyal soldier would.
Yeah, like an honorable guy who's just been raised to the rank of number one would feel.
Oh, God. So anyway, Hashwalt says, you're almost a different person from earlier. You seem so full of hope right now. Did he not seem full of hope earlier? I can't tell, because Ichigo's been in this arc focusing on the Quincy for, like, 5 pages.
He's just showed up. He's been like, you weren't like this before. Like, when was the last time Ishida showed up? I think it was 2014?
Jack comes in and he's like, Oswald, you shouldn't say things about people you don't mean.
He's just like, I know. Like, sheepishly, like, oh, I know. I saw.
Ah, I hate this fucking manga. Oh, it hurts.
Do we need to have the Ghost of Bleach past, present, and future talk to you again?
It's our special Valentine's Day.
They just show up on every holiday.
Ick had a very powerful conundrum that he had to deal with. Chris, I can't think of what to get my girlfriend for Valentine's Day. Oh, Nick, you're so upset about Bleach. What? No, that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
And that's when little Dan shows up like, hey, it's me, the Ghost of Bleach Past again. Like, you're just like, I wonder how I'm going to spend my flag day today. Boom! Hey there, buddy. Time to go back and realize what a shithead you've been. Like, I don't like this.
And she is like, oh. Well, the fact you're surprised just now means you didn't previously see me full of hope. And Ash was like, shut the fuck up.
Fuck you.
Well, that power for you is far from almighty. Literally, like, this is the first time you've seen Ashwell predict something that didn't come true, and you're like, oh, well, not so hot now, are you? God, this sucks so much. So Ichigo and Rihime and Chad run off to go and try and kill Jiobu, I presume.
Nick, there are words in that giant shadow.
My last words?
This is the strangest placement for a Bleach chapter title I think we'll ever see.
We'll never see a stranger one. Spoilers. And Rihime is tearing up a little bit. Ichigo's like, what's wrong? And Rihime's like, no, I'm actually just relieved. I never really believed Uriya would take the Quincy side or anything, but to hear Drethi from him was a relief. Just thinking how Uriya was still the same Uriya we knew.
Do you think somewhere out there there is, like, a Bleach fangirl or fanboy, could be both,
Both exist. I know. Well, I know they both exist now, after a certain experience a few months ago, which we'll go into further detail about.
But I say, do you think there was one who was crying in relief that Ryu wasn't a bad guy?
Or at the very least, they were like, oh, Rihime is so relieved, yes!
Fine, let her have her moment, but was there anybody who was like, oh, thank God, Ryu's not a bad guy, and like, weeping in relief like Rihime was?
Even if not, I'm sure that they thought that this confrontation he had with Hotshot was awesome. Like, you know, you can never account for taste, you know? Even with as far down as its sales have gone, Bleach still sells, like, 3 million volumes a year, or something like that, that's still a pretty, you know, powerful fan base. That's still a lot of people reading the manga, very loyally, who presumably still enjoy it. Therefore, with that many people who enjoy the series in general, there must have been at least one person who was like, yes! So, yeah, you know, no accounting for taste. You know, I think it's fucking stupid, but not everyone's got to think that way. Anyway, giant sand statue monster things! Out of nowhere! I have no idea where these came from. Just these giant statues with spears start attacking Ichigo and company.
You know, you say that, I didn't think it at the time, but now that you mention it, why are they there? what are these?
Were they ever shown at some point?
They have the Quincy mark on them, so they're not like some Soul Society defense that he's just taken over.
Did they show, did we like get a flash of a bunch of statues when Varvelt was first constructed? I don't remember.
Oh my god, I so want Kubo's author remarks to be like, if you want to know where the sand statues came from, just read my new graphic novel, my new novel that came out. Sand, I hardly knew ye. It features a side story by Tosin Zutenin. I don't remember his name. The 69 guy.
Chad blocks with his shield arm thing. And, basically, like, the bridge collapses, separating him from Ichigo and Rihime. And Chad's like, I'm fine, go! And Ichigo still looks worried, so Chad goes,
thumbs up.
And Ichigo's like, no, Chad, you'll only be okay as long as none of them have names!
You'll be able to beat these guys, but if someone else comes, you're screwed! Don't worry, I have Genjo with me. Who?
And Ganju pops up out of the ground. And Chad's like, where have you been? And Ganju's like, well, you guys ditched me. I've been lost since we got split up. And I accomplished nothing. He's
but
back
gonna,
now.
But they're going to team up, Nick. So Chad and Ganju.
So to recap, when this group met up with Grimmjow, they split up to find him. They did nothing because they all convened together on Asuka and Lochlevar anyway. And if they had encountered him together, presumably the result would have still been the same because he would have just, you know, stuck them in his, you know, lethality, you know, zone, whatever. And then they split up again after beating Ishida. So why'd they split up the first time? If they were just going to get together after doing nothing and then split up again?
Yeah.
So, Ganju.
I mean, isn't the presumption of this, too, that Grimmjow's still unconscious on the floor back somewhere near Asuka and Lochlevar?
Or maybe we're supposed to somehow think he's dead. Like, he got reintroduced to die.
To die, essentially off-panel, because we saw him get defeated, but we haven't really seen him since then.
So, Ganju is like, fighting stone statues is perfect because I have my, you know, turn to sand technique. This will be perfect for me. And then they have this really weird exchange where Chad goes, do you like unglamorous work, Ganju? Ichigo can only see the path he's on. That's how he is. Our job is to clean up everything in the castle so we can pave a path back for Ichigo.
I will disagree with you on that. I think that is actually one of the core lines that Bleach has had in a long while. But just that notion of like, alright, look, this is a shitty role for Chad to have in the, presumably the final arc of Bleach, where it's like, yeah, I don't even get to fight a named character now. I'm fighting an army of sand things for some reason. But at least the notion of like, that's my role, is to make sure that when Ichigo wins, because he's going to, that he has a clear path back. It's like a cool thing. It kind of fits that motif Chad's always had of being like kind of the strong friend that backs up Ichigo, that kind of protects his back in a way.
I'd probably appreciate this more if he had been doing that more from the start, you know.
Or if it felt like this was a more significant thing than just a bunch of sand golems that just kind of appeared are blocking his path, and when I guess Ganju will help him. God forbid we don't even get to see it. Because it actually looks kind of cool. Like, we see him materializing both arms, and he, you know, looks like he's going to have kind of maybe an interesting fight. I don't know. I'm kind of just excited that Chad's going to get to do something.
Can we also, like, talk about, like, how many this is because this is unusual for Bleach. How many paths we've split on and are focusing on individually? Because we've got the stuff with Gerard, the stuff with Askanak Levar,
burnt me.
The stuff with Hashwan Nishida, the stuff with Chad and Ganju and these golem things, and the stuff with Ichigo and Dorihime going to confront Jiobak as well.
And technically, the stuff going on with Aizen. Technically, the stuff going on with Lillibarrow and all the clones.
Yeah,
Lillibarrow's,
yeah. So,
technically, still out there somewhere are the Fullbringers. I have to assume they're going to play a part in things, and I cannot...
Oh, we're not
focusing on them, so we'll take this back. But I almost put money on the Panthers winning, so maybe my bets aren't the sure for things, but I'm pretty certain I would bet money Orihime is going to get involved and blocked off some way along this way so that Ichigo could have his final fight alone.
He'll be like, and she has to fight...
More sand golems showed up! It's sand golems with a Z belt, just like when Zoro fucking Zed showed up on Power Rangers, and he improved the putties!
By giving them a weakness.
By giving them an obvious target to punch.
Okay. I hate Bleach. Let's move on to Fairy Tail.
Sure. Fairy Tail 472, Laxus versus Wall. And the cover page is Lucy being seductive.
The hills are alive with the sound of boobs.
With mini skirts and hips that don't seem to anatomically
Since
work.
When does Lucy have a singing gimmick?
Oh, she's just supposed to be like an all-purpose idol, I think, at this point. So why not?
Well, she's like a model, though. Wendy was a singer.
Yeah, but I mean, she can be a lot of things, Nick. She doesn't have to be pigeonholed into your expectations.
She's a modern woman.
She can do a lot of things. She can sing. She can be a journalist. She can be a bikini model. She can do underwear modeling. She can be a fetish model. A lot of different models, Nick. People can... been do weird things to her feet on the internet, and she pays to make them watch. Anyway, so Laxus is fighting Wall, and Wall reveals that he's an alchemist of some kind. It's kind of a weird little twist to his powers. He basically pushes his hands against the ground and creates an alchemical composite of copper and zinc to basically make bullets that he then fires, which is kind of cool. And Laxus just destroys them by creating, like, an electricity field around him that disintegrates the bullets as they get closer. And it's just an enormous lightning bolt that kind of comes down. Leon and Gray are far away, and Leon's like, lightning? And that's when Gray says, what could have been a cool line, where he's like, that's typical weather in Magnolia. And if you stop there, they'd have been like, that's a cool line. But then he continues, and he's like, you know, sunny with a chance of Laxus. And I'm like, oh, you suck. And then he continues on further, and he's like, oh, then there's some isolated glaciers. I'm like, you fucking had a good line, and you just beat it into the ground.
Juvia turns around and is like, I think we should see other people.
And he's like in a weatherman outfit. He's like, no, hold on, I had a whole thing. I was going to do the whole guild. And watch out for some isolated monster attacks as Elfman walks by. He's like, stop doing this. he's like mid-punch, like, stop that. Wall starts saying, like, oh, you know, it's not bad. I'm going to analyze you. And he sees that Laxus' body is full of that anti-magic mist that we kind of were reminded of last chapter. So he sees an advantage in that. And he, like, has his arm do that kind of quick, you know, discharge thing. Like, the pistons and machinery kind of do where they just let off. They kind of vent, essentially. And they have, like, a big punching kind of fight. There's some back and forth a little bit between them, you know. Hey, Wall questions how he's even alive. He's like, it's not how I stay alive, it's how I live. Which, okay line. I'm okay with that. Has some back and forth. And we cut away to the stuff with Urza and Kaguya. I guess they're going to fight the third member of the Spriggan 12 that's over here. I can't remember the guy's name. It's the one who was, like, hiding out in the boat. It's not Bradman, which is the only man I care about at this point, but those two, I guess, are going to go eliminate that person. They're going to team up for him, which leaves Wendy and Sharia to be the ones that fight against Dee Maria, you know, the swordswoman who specifically cuts off people's clothes. Carla, gives Sharia Wendy's coat, because she's like, You can't walk around like this. And of course, the only
good
thing
job,
really...
Chariot. Good job, Carlos. Yeah, good job. The
line to come to that is Chariot saying, huh? It's so tight. And Wendy's, like, upset because she's like, this means Chariot has much bigger boobs than I do.
No fucking shit.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
She has, like, eye cups or something like that, despite the fact that she looks, you know, 10 otherwise.
But I'm glad that they've...
I'm surprised Sherry doesn't show up more often because she, you know, perfectly embodies both uncomfortable fetishes that Hera has for female body types. So
I mean, you know, she shows up more than she should already, so I think he looks for reasons to get her involved.
You know, I'm surprised that Urza is not actually going to take on what's her name, who cuts off women's clothes? Di Maria. Because she would be the perfect match for her. Oh, she cut off my clothes. Someone's a new one.
I mean, I feel like they did that at one time before, though. I might be just mixing up with the Ravemaster thing. I feel like there was some opponent that was essentially like that. Yeah, they did. They had, it was Fukuru, the owl guy back in the Tower of Paradise, essentially had some ability. I don't know if he cut off clothes, but he basically eliminated all of her armor, and to the point where she's like, oh, the armor I need to beat you is a fucking bandages around my tits and pants and a sword, and I just beat you with this soul of sword or whatever bullshit reason that it was. Maybe the hero is like, I don't want to cover old ground. I have perfectly other female characters I could exploit at some point. They're going to fight against Di Maria, and she's like, you know, this is a battlefield, not a playground. It's no place for children. Wendy has some line about, you know, you made this beautiful town ugly, and we're going to change it back that way. And we cut away then, basically. Back to Loxus versus Wall, which I think is the fight people kind of were hoping we'd see throughout the entire chapter.
Well, considering the chapter's style, Loxus versus Wall.
Yeah. So they're having a fight essentially through town. Like, Loxus punches Wall and... Or sorry, Wall punches Loxus, it looks like, and just sends him flying through fucking town. Like, you literally see an entire block of buildings just get exploded with smoke because it's Laxus's fucking corpse just being sent right through them. They have some big kind of back and forth. I don't want to go over all a little bit of action, but Wall starts talking. He's like, analysis complete. Infected by anti-magic particles, but still functions in top class of fairy tales wizards. My current personality type, impulsive. Its flaws could be exploited by this opponent. So he realizes, like, oh, I'm actually going to change my personality, because I'm a complete robot, to make myself more fitting against this kind of opponent. And, you know, he has some countdown to 90 seconds. And then there's, I think he basically blasts off. Like, he flies into space, transforms as this big shining light in the sky, flies back down, and he's like, assault Wall, attack mode engaged. And that's when Loxus starts kind of clutching his chest, saying, no, not now. Presuming that the magic, anti-magic particles are attacking him at this point. So yep. That's the chapter.
Yep. Kind of an up and down affair.
Yeah. I. You know what? All things considered, I like the fight between Loxus and Wall and how it's going.
I really do too.
I mean, you know what? I'm going to put this one on the list of best fights preemptively, but we'll see what happens. I liked it.
Yeah, the main attraction was good. The stuff with Sherry's tits are bigger than Wendy's, despite her being the same size. Otherwise, was just like, whatever. Urza and Kagura got a team up. Whatever.
That is true. Someone in the chat brought up Wall was wearing high heels.
Yes, he is.
Good for him. Gender equality, Nick. More male characters need to be in highly impractical footwear for a battle.
I don't know.
Maybe
Hero's been playing Undertale recently.
It can't quite reach the level of Air Gear where there were high heel roller skates that people battled in. Oh, if the Patreon keeps going, we'll get there, Nick. You'll find out what it means. But oh, what a weird series.
Yep. All right. Food Wars. Shokugeki no Soma 153 Hall of Death.
Dark name for such a cutesy cover page of a little girl with a stuffed animal.
You know, with Momo just getting her stuffed animal and Anywho, Central is doing their big, you know, taking down all of the clubs and so on and so forth, and the members of the Polar Star Dharma are going to scout it out. Soma is kind of thinking to himself about, it's like, oh, I wonder what, Ikumi with the Bull Society have their Shokuyaki. Also, I wonder what's going on with Hayama and the Shiomi Seminar. Oh, and then there's Kuga, because he's, you know, in charge of the Chinese Food Society. Presumably, I can only assume that not everyone is going to lose as badly as they're made out to in this chapter, because they do, what happens is what should happen, basically. Central shows up, and they stomp all over everybody. And the main focus, because Azon is one of the two that are there, in the hall that Soma and Megumi and Aldini are checking out. The other is Momo Akanegakubo, who is the girl on the cover page with the stuffed cat, and her specialty is desserts. And essentially she is basically made out to be the top desserts chef in all of Totsuki right now. The top pâtissier. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. And her gimmick is, when she's ready to take something out of the oven, she tears off her stuffed cat's paws and wears them as oven mitts. I love Food Wars.
Does she have to, like, stitch them back on afterwards?
Yes, because there's very obvious stitches on the cat's arm.
It seems so inconvenient.
I also like how the cat has, like, an X mark on his cheek because it's flinching in pain as she does.
Or it's angry, like, what are you doing?
Why are you doing that for?
I assume it would talk like an old 1920s gangster. Like, hey, what are you doing over there? Digging on the arches, kid.
I got no hands now. Why are you gonna do that?
Yeah, come on now. Meh. Meh.
So everyone is super impressed with the cake that she makes. It does look very pretty, and it glimmers and stuff.
Nick, would you eat that cake?
It's chocolate, no. it looks nice, though.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, fuck.
A chessboard.
No.
I just guessed the first thing it reminded me of.
God damn it. I can't remember. Bambino. Yeah. That was it. Remember when he...
When he was trained to be a pastry chef, essentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the delicate kind of attitude he had to learn for that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So, desserts in a cookie manga kind of thing. Anyhow, Azon and Momo win their first Shokugekis by unanimous decision. And then, someone's getting all worked up. And he's like, oh man, this is really impressive. I want to challenge Akanegakubo.
I'm just gonna call it
Momo from now on. That's a gigantic mouthful.
What was Momo and Azon working together?
No, they've got their own individual
challenges. They were in two separate challenges, okay. Because that seems kind of degrading for Azon to essentially become like, I'm gonna be your sous chef, I guess, for this one.
Or maybe he was observing. No. It says both of them have won their challenges in dominating fashion. I don't know if they're going on at the same time, but presumably they've just...
They are, because now that I look closer at the scoreboard, it looks like two separate names against Central. I can't read them too closely, but they don't
very,
look similar.
Very, blurry. But yeah, okay. Meanwhile, Azon goes, and kicks some boxes over and stuff. Because he's still pissed off about being humiliated by Soma. And we get a flashback that explains he actually offered to, leave the council to Izami. He was like, hey, you can kick me out the council, you can kick me out of the institute, do whatever. I lost. You don't have any room for losers. And Izami was like, no, what are you talking about? You will be a useful and valuable member of Central. Though yes, it would be a wise idea for you to reflect on your failure. It wouldn't do for you to further tarnish your reputation. Which, obviously, is far more humiliating than if you'd just been kicked out of the school. Mm-hmm. He just has to stay in the same position while everyone's like, oh, look at that loser. Yeah.
Do you, Nick, do you think we might see a face turn from Azon?
Maybe. That's possible.
Would you like it?
I mean, we saw a Subaru face turn, so... I don't know if I would like it or not, but, hell, I mean, Pegasus was awesome as a good guy, too. I don't think these guys have names. These four, like, underclassmen show up, and they're introduced as handpicked soldiers by Azami to be Central's elite soldiers. And we've got...
The Hulk.
We've got the Hulk. Like, I can't look at him and not think Hulk.
Like, he has the same fate, like the same kind of like shaped head.
Yeah. Long-haired girl with super bangs.
Mean girl.
Yeah, with side ponytail. And stupid dude.
The guy who's trying way too hard. He was just like...
Let's go over his face from left to right. His hair looks like a girl's hair. Like, he looks like a girl who woke up with bedhead and didn't have time to style her hair, so she just put, you know, a headband in. That's what his hair looks like. He's got screws.
He's got eyebrow piercing, yeah.
Yeah. He looks like he's trying to have Hiruma eyebrows, but failing. He keeps on sticking his tongue out. He's got...
A face tattoo.
He's got Mike Tyson tattoo, basically. Just a little bit lower. And he's got an earring.
A single earring.
Which is a chain leading down to an upside-down cross. Do you have any idea how uncomfortable that would be to have a weight on a pendulum dangling from your eardrum like that? And it's not like it's, you know, just kind of hanging down there. It's constantly, like, flicking around as he makes these weird, stupid facial expressions.
This is...
He should not have an eardrum anymore, is what I'm saying. Not eardrum, earlobe.
This is, like, what happens when I start making a character in a video game, and I'm like, huh, they don't look interesting enough. So I just keep adding, like, widgets and shit to their face until I'm like, this is too much now, and I had to pull it back. He's essentially that point where I'd be like, I've added too much to this character. Maybe he doesn't need eyebrow piercing, a face tattoo, and a giant cross.
It's a good thing that this guy is just one of the underlings for Central, as opposed to actually one of the members of the Council of Ten, because he looks way too fucking stupid to pull up. Also, he has those stupid capris that end, like, halfway between the knees and the ankles. Like, everything about this guy, like, yeah, you get to look at him later on when they're victorious.
Oh, yeah, I do see. Yeah.
Everything about this guy, just, like, bad fashion decisions.
So, Nick, you're not going to be supportive if I decide to cosplay him?
Oh, God.
I've already scheduled my eyebrow piercing. I need you on board.
So, they show up and they're like, oh yeah, we will, you know, defeat these guys in Tosuke. There's no need for, you know, the members of the Council of Ten in order to do everything here. And they even go so far as to challenge the research societies that are, you know, trying to stay alive to their specialties. And they still win handily, you know, 3-0, and force them to, you know, disband. Then stupid upside-down cross earring guy says, you're on nothing but scrubs! You really don't deserve to insult anybody, dude. Like, I know, like, you know, you put on an impressive performance, but seriously, you are not going to have an ear by the time you're 16. Seriously. He just like, do your tone, you know, yeah, you know, none of you were chosen, blah, 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 blah. You should just bow down to us, to Central. And someone else have, like, jumped over the barricade and are beating him up in the middle of the ring, basically. They confront him. They're like, what? Oh, heard you was talking shit. And Megumi's like, oh, no, what are they doing? No, no, this wasn't the plan, no.
Oh, it's all gone to shit.
And he's just like, do you say something to the first years? And that's the end of the chapter. It's just them confronting each other.
All right, now, Nick, you're forced to cosplay one of the four members of the group, but you can't take the Hulk.
Damn it! I would actually do long-haired bangs girl.
Okay. But I guess we haven't seen too much of her full body, so...
I mean, she has... She seems to actually be dressing pretty conservatively. It looks like she's just wearing, you know, regular, like, black chef's, out uniform. And that, beyond, you know, wearing that, you just have to wear a long-ass wig.
And all right, I guess the better question, do you cosplay douche guy or schoolgirl?
God, I would probably have to cosplay schoolgirl at that point.
I'm like, really? Because I feel like you'd be buying a lot of women's clothing to do the guy character anyway. You think they make those kind of capri pants for men?
He's got, like, Quincy-style... He's taken, like, the, you know, oh, yeah, I'm a punk, upside-down cross of Satan. Yeah, yeah, I got a tattoo, I stick my tongue out, I got piercings. He's even got upside-down crosses on, like, the cuffs of his clothing. He's so stupid.
Just one constant bad decision after another in his attire in the morning.
Do we have a worst designs category for Ricky Muckery?
Can make, like, a funniest design. I don't know. We'll keep it in mind.
All right. Yeah, that was Food Wars. Better than last week's, if only for the so bad it's good character design. But, I mean, we are very much in this kind of just creeping forward to the next actual, you know, plot arc, it seems, at this point. I don't know. I guess I would have preferred to see more of the actual Council of Ten. But I think that I will appreciate down the line getting the slow reveal of, you know, the members, giving them their own chance to shine instead of putting them all into a montage. Because, because we've seen Ashiki, we've seen Ariana, we've seen Kuga, we've seen Tsukasa, and now we've seen Momo. And each of them has been given their own chapter to show off. It was never like they did something... And also, here's also another one of the members of the Council of Ten doing stuff. In fact, I think the one we've actually seen the least from out of the ones we've actually seen cook has been Ariana. Because...
We saw Tsukasa's cooking, at least.
Right. And he had an entire chapter built around his cooking. Ariana hasn't had an entire chapter built around her cooking. But Ashiki did, and Kuga did. And Momo is kind of easy to get away with just doing, you know... Like, a little bit, because, like, she's the dessert one.
Yeah, we still haven't seen...
Also, memorable gimmick.
And they still haven't done that thing where they give her, Azon, like, her title.
Azon 2, we've seen.
Like, you know, we got that whole thing with, like, Azon being the alchemist and Tsukasa being the white knight of the table or whatever. We haven't gotten that for Momo necessarily. So I think this was kind of a way to be like, she's a dessert character, but we haven't really shown you what she can do.
Right. I think that I'll appreciate down the line once we've gotten all the rest of the members of the Council of Ten have their own spotlights, their own big reveals and stuff, as opposed to if they were all jammed together in one montage.
And this is
but
good
at the same time,
least.
So it's one of those things where it's like, I want the instant gratitude of seeing the Council of Ten in action instead of these fucking idiots who are their underlings.
I mean, it makes sense, though, to also give our characters an entry into the quote-unquote war. You don't want them to... Because you want them to win. You want their introduction into this fight to be a victorious one. You can't do that against the Council of Ten. So, you know, having these guys underneath them for them to challenge, and maybe even it's a close fight. Maybe, like, you know, maybe there's a couple losses along the way. Because I imagine it's not... I imagine these aren't going to be the only assholes in this group, and there's probably other members of, like, our larger cast that are getting involved in shit right now. Like, we already know that Hayama's probably in a Shokugeki somewhere, and a giant tit American flag girl bikini is somewhere as well. I can't remember her name.
Ikumi.
I vaguely know her name, I just can't remember it. It's just easy to say, the American flag bikini girl. Like, those guys are going to be having their fights, too, so, you know, it'll be interesting.
By the way, why does she have an American flag bikini? She's clearly Japanese with a name like that.
Because she's a meat person, and America is the king of meats. We have Burger King and Five Guys. I don't know what else you could want. We have the best of the best, and something that gives you diarrhea, you know? Both experiences you want from getting uncooked meat or cooked meat.
It was okay. Let's do My Hero Academia then. It's chapter 77. It's okay. No, I don't mean that about the Jabber. That's the title.
Oh, I thought you were comforting me. I'm like, oh God, Nick, do you know? Oh, I've been waiting to come out for so long.
So we've got Tamura talking with one of his underlings, the guy with the jacket and the weird...
The void face.
Darkness face, yeah. And Shigaraki says, it's still not time for me to play again because the game's changed. It's been an RPG up until now. With only halfway decent equips, I went and charged the final boss at level 1. But we should have been playing this like a sim. One where I'm the player moving units around and breaking through to higher ranks. For that, you gotta put some cratch in this superpowered society. You're such a nerd, Shigaraki, and I kind of love it.
I want the void guy to be like, perhaps we should play it like a MOBA, where you're competing teamwork, and one of you has to counter jungle, because the other opposing team has at least a platinum level jungler, and ours is a diamond 2, so we're really going to have to kind of war together. It's like, you've lost this analogy, and now you've just made me hate you.
Shigaraki's like, well, no, see, the problem with that is that we've got that one asshole who thinks he knows how to play every role perfectly, so he just is like, no, I admit or I leave.
They're like, but you have dynamic Q now. You didn't Q as mid, you don't get mid. I waited in this queue for 30 minutes to get mid, you don't get mid because you yelled at me. Shigaraki's like, I really didn't want him to get into this much of an argument about this.
It was just supposed to be a metaphor, okay?
Yeah, it might also be more like XCOM, you know, where you have to deal with a lot of aliens coming at you from all angles. And Chrysalis, such bullshit. There's like 7 of them on a map at one time. There's too many. They just kill your Overwatches because they're so hard to hit and always move. Oh, I could go on for days. And I will, Shigaraki's like, and I will.
Shigaraki just like closes his hand around the guy's neck and starts disintegrating while still explaining.
The other thing I want to note, I've started to like realize this is a trend. I feel like every manga at some point has to make a comparison to their characters as video game, like in video game terms. I remember iShield did that too, where they were like linemen or like warriors.
Linemen are like warriors, and the skill players are like the mages.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Notably, Shigaraki has a picture of Bakugo all chained up with, like, a Hannibal Lecter mask.
This picture is so crusty. Why is that? He's like, stop looking at it!
but he notes, like, the society is bound hand and foot by all its damned rules, and we're not the only ones feeling suppressed. So, presumably that is why they want Bakugo, is they actually know that much about him. Deku has just beaten Super Muscle Guy, and he's very tired now, and his arms are broken, and but he prevents himself from collapsing. You know, he clenches his knees and stuff, and he's like, okay, I can still keep going. And Koda's like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you going to do? And Deku says, well, you know, I really didn't expect that, you know, he would be that strong, but if all the villains attacking Dai are on his level, then that means everyone's in trouble. And they could be targeting us students. I need to tell Aizawa Sensei and the Pussycats. And if my actions can save any of them, then I have to do something. My arms might be messed up and weakened, but I damaged that guy good. He shouldn't be waking up anytime soon. I'm sure he'll be waking up sometime soon. And I've got to protect you. Because there's one thing only you can do. With the forest ablaze like this, pretty much every path will be blocked off. We need your quirk. You can help us, just like how you saved me earlier. It's like, that's pretty cool. You know. Then the kid's like, hey, you're the one who can save us now. You can be the hero kind of thing. And then he has Koda climb on his back because he can't hold him. And he's like, oh, my legs still work. And he starts jumping off. Meanwhile, Aizawa totally got incinerated.
He's dead. He's never coming back.
No, just like Kunahana. And you know what? Pretty sure Aizawa will never be an important character.
Never. Not like Rebecca. Oh, wait, no, like Rebecca.
but it turns out Aizawa dodged the flame attack just by leaping up in the air like a ninja, and then he wraps up the guy with his bandages, knees him in the fucking face, takes him down, and pins him face first to the ground and says, you will tell us what you're here for, what your numbers are, where your positions are, you're going to tell me everything. He's like, why should I? Because. He just... pops his shoulder out immediately. Aizawa's hardcore.
Doesn't play around, man. His students are in danger.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, I'm going to do your other arm next, so you better tell me what's going on. If I get as far as your legs, it's going to be a big problem whenever they haul you off to jail.
They have to carry you and everything.
Yeah. But Aizawa is distracted by the appearance of Ida and company, and that gives Fire Guy an opening to knock him away.
Dobby!
Nobby?
Dobby.
Dobby, you're right. I was waiting for his name to come up naturally. Shut up.
He's Dobby the hell self.
And Aizawa still thinks that he's got Dobby tangled up in his bandage, but suddenly it disintegrates right through him, and which really takes Aizawa off guard, because he's like, but wait a minute, he had the flame attack. I thought that was his quirk. And his entire body just starts to kind of crumble and melt away. While he mocks Aizawa, saying, well, you really care about your students, huh? I hope you have what it takes to protect them. I'm starting to really warm up to this guy as a villain. Not as a top guy or anything, but I kind of want him to stick around for a while.
Dobby.
Yes. Yes, him.
I can see it. He seems interesting.
So we cut to the forest where the real Dobby is.
I don't get this at all. I really hope you can explain it to me, because I was hoping the Shonen Jump podcast would, and it didn't. I don't understand how, like, if this is some joke that doesn't translate into Japanese.
The other guy can make clones.
But he shits all over Dobby, and then Dobby shows up and he's like, well, that was weak. And then the other guy's like, no, your clones were strong. And then Dobby's like, all right, we'll send out two of me. And then he's like, okay, I'll send out more fodder. Like,
well, look at him. Look at him in the background. He's flipping Dobby off with one hand and giving him a thumbs up in the other.
Okay, he's shitting on him in private, but when the guy shows up...
No, he's got a split personality, because his thing is cloning people.
Oh, okay, so he's bipolar.
I think so. Okay, insanely bipolar. Like, not actually realistically bipolar.
Oh, I did not get that at all.
Yeah, so he's telling him, he's like, if you just send more fire, you're just going to get the same result. What's the point? Okay, I'll do it!
Yeah, I'm glad someone is, because I just sat the entire time and was like, did I read this wrong? Like, I sat here analyzing it, I was like, am I missing words in what he's saying? I couldn't figure it out.
I believe this was the guy in the two-page spread last week who had the four arms. I believe so. I'll have to double-check that. Anyway, we cut over to Deku with Koda on his back, finding Aizawa as well. I was like, oh shit, man.
What the fuck? Jesus.
Oh god. Deku just, starts talking. He's like, I've got to tell you something, but first I got to tell Mandalay something. You should take Koda with you. He's got a water-based quirk, so you can extinguish the flames and stuff. And he's like, okay, please, thanks. And he starts to run off. And I was like, wait, god.
I do like how, like, the first, like, in his big explanation, you see, like, a tiny wait, and then he keeps going, and you just see, I said wait, and then he starts running off, like, God damn it, wait! Holy shit!
So, yeah, he says, like, God, you fucked yourself up again, essentially. But he realizes that the situation is urgent, so Aizawa gives Deku a message to deliver to Mandalay as well. So we cut over to Mandalay and Tiger fighting against their two opponents. And a giant, stupid knife guy tries to attack Mandalay, but Deku comes flying in with a drop kick and shatters it into its individual components, seemingly. And he yells out in midair that Koda is safe, and then he delivers the message that Aizawa told him to give. Basically, Aizawa has reasoned the students are the targets, so they have to defend themselves, and so he is giving the word for everyone to fight back, that it's okay for the students in both classes to use their powers, and he will bear the responsibility for doing so. We get this giant two-page spread, with Aizawa, kind of having this grim look on his face, and the various students, confronting danger of all sorts of the villains that are taking them on. So, I'm looking forward to more. I thought this chapter was fine. Had some good exchanges in it. I do, like I said, I'm liking Dobby more and more. But I'm mostly just like, oh, I want to see what, you know, the other students get to do now. Because I don't want this to just be several chapters of Deku flying in and drop-kicking people and then running off to kick the next person.
I don't think he can do it. I love this chapter. I love the way it ends, particularly. This is one of the core, like, conclusions to a chapter. I just love this notion of, like, the message going out telepathically to everyone around the camp. The message of, like, it's okay to fight all out. And, like, cutting around, and you just see the different kind of fights that are being set up. And you can see Asue and Uraraka against that, like, schoolgirl with the creepy knife thing. And you see Bakugo and Todoroki. And you can see Tokoyami up there in the top panel. Like, he looks like he's being stressed. And Yayorozo and Tetsu Tetsu. Like, it's just cool seeing them all, like, preparing to fight. And that, like, cool group message going out, like, go all out. It is pretty kind of cool, like... The notion of it being that he's giving them the permission, because it was a big deal, you know, Todoroki, Ida, and Deku are all going to be very severely punished for essentially doing the same thing against Stain. So it does have a purpose, at least, to initiate, like, kind of like, it's okay, I'll take the responsibility for it. But just a, kind of like a cool build-up to just the notion that all these things are going to happen at once. Let's see what happens out of this. I did kind of realize, though, as we were going through this... at first, I thought there was no way that Bakugo could turn to the villain side. But if the idea does happen that, you know, Deku goes different places, if Deku shows up where Bakugo is, I can feel that being what pushes him into joining the villain side. Because he's not an evil person, but his attitude towards Deku is irrationally violent at times. And even though they've had a moment together where they've kind of grown... I could see that being what kind of pushes him over.
Right. Because he wouldn't want to be saved by Deku again or something like that.
So, I like this a lot. I'm really excited to see where we kind of get in the next few chapters. I really hope... I don't know if we'll get to see all these fights. I kind of hope we do. But above all of them, I think the one I want to see is Asui and Uraraka and that fight. Mm-hmm. Those are two characters I really want to kind of see more of.
Okay.
So, good chapter.
Alright, before we move on to One Piece, just briefly touching on Nisekoi, launching into, it looks like, Tsugumi's conclusion arc, it seems, because she finally found out that Chijige and Raku were faking their relationship. Paula then consequently found out and was like, oh, well then you have an opening then to try and win Raku's affection. So you should wear this thing! Which presumably will lead to her wearing a bondage outfit from Fairy Tail or something.
Oh god, I was like, wow, we haven't gotten that in Nisekoi before.
I mentioned last week wanting to get to the Tsugumi thing, so yeah.
You got it, Nick.
Yep.
Your girl is competing now. It's her chance to win it all.
And lose.
What, just because she's not first girl? Or second girl?
Or second girl. Or third girl, for that matter.
She was third girl, wasn't she?
She was actually third girl. She was third girl before Marika showed up.
Yeah.
And became new third girl. Kind of had her position overtaken. Anyhow. So, One Piece. Chapter 815, Take Me With You. Our cover this time is Vivi. I think it's like, even, you know, without the context of like, oh, people are hearing about the new series, I actually don't really like this cover page. I like the image of her, you know, kind of staring out into the horizon, and like, oh, remembering good times with her friends and stuff.
And, I mean, it might be completely coincidence, but the chapter title does seem rather appropriate for it, too. Take Me With You, kind of like her last message to them back in Alabasta, before they were like, we can't.
I like having that kind of...
We'll always be friends.
Yeah. I like having that kind of character in, you know, the continuity. Like, the one who wanted to be a member of the crew, but had to stay behind kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Last time, Peckums revealed that Sanji's family, the Vinsmokes, were a family of killers. And he continues his explanation this time, There's a group known as the Germa 66, or maybe Germa 66? I don't know. It's spelled like Germ and then A, so I think it's Germa. Well, no, because if it came from Japanese, it would be Germa. Germa 66? Whatever. Also called the Warmongers. Let's just do that. And Nami's like, but they're supposed to be a myth! And everyone's like, no! And they're on the top of the organization is the Vinsmoke family, led by Blacklegs' old man. And Luffy's like, I don't know what this means, and I also don't care. That kind of sums up Luffy in a nutshell, doesn't it?
He's a noble character, but his attitude about approaching it is very much like, eh, who gives a fuck?
I'm gonna punch him in the face.
Yeah. It's not meat, and I can't punch it, so I'm gonna find a way to punch it.
But he's just like, well, I just want to know if he's going to come back. If he's getting married, that's fine, but I don't want that to cause us to be Big Mom's followers. So if that happens, you guys have to work for me. The sheer gall. And Peckham actually starts, you know, just like, burst into... who burst into laughter? I think it's one of the... I think it's like Wanda or something like
that. Yeah, the bunny girl, essentially.
Right. And, like, Peckham's is so shy with this, he starts foaming at the mouth at first. And he's like, what the... You stupid kid, I will ruin you! But yeah, he's like, yo, there's no way you can do this. You know, Big Mom's one of the four emperors, blah, blah, blah. Also, he, like, pulls his sunglasses up so he can stare at Luffy real intense, but he has cute little kitty cat eyes, so Luffy thinks he's adorable. But eventually, Peckham was just like, you have no idea what you're messing with. Like, you can't do this. For example, if you try to reject one of Mama's tea party invitations, then within days, a present will be delivered to you. A box containing the head of someone close to you. So, yeah, that's power. You know, she's one of the four emperors. You have no idea what you're actually messing with.
The way to describe it, too, like, it could have been the heads of one of your Straw Hats, or maybe someone from the restaurant back at the East Blue, or maybe even the head of someone from, Kamabaka Kingdom, you know, the Queendom, rather. I forget what the other name for it was. But, yeah, essentially, like, I just like that idea of also playing to the notion of, like, Peckham's and them know about the Barade, they know about the time he spent with, Ivankov and all that. Just kind of a very cool little touch onto it.
Because they've been trying to find Sanji, so... Peckham says, actually, I will assure you one thing. You are not going to be placed beneath the influence of our crew. This is a political marriage. Mama always seals the deal with new followers through blood. In other words, this wedding is a ritual that binds the Vinsmoke and Charlotte families by blood. It's not meant to draw your crew into her employ. The moment the wedding is made official... Blackleg Sanji will cease to be your crewmate. And Luffy, like, gets up in his face. He's gonna grab around the collar. He's like, no, you don't get to decide that. You know. Luffy's like, there's no way that he would ever, you know, actually agree to that. So. But yeah. Peckham's says, essentially, it seems, because it seems though, like, the Straw Hats are now planning to go after Sanji. Peckham's like, yeah, I want to go with you, because that beige guy thought he had killed me, and I want to get back at him. Luffy says that he would like to go alone in order to do it, because if they go as a group, then it would be like declaring war. And as Luffy puts it, we don't have time for that stuff right now. So it's like, but if I go together with Peckham's alone, we might be able to sneak into the tea party and ruin the ceremony. Oh, God. Luffy's plans are so weird. Zoro's still angry about Sanji. Usopp and Chopper and Robin catch up to the rest of the group because they obviously had to stay behind while Chopper was, you know, looking after Cat Viper. Cat Viper then does Garchu of Gratitude, which is essentially a flying headbutt, and he injures himself again, because Cat Viper is amazing. The Heart Pirates show up with Law, and Luffy says, hi guys! And then he goes up to talk with Law, and Beppo gets really upset. Law's upset because now they're involved with Big Mom. I forget what the actual point of the show is. Oh, right, there it is. So at the very end, Kinemon and Kanjuro finally have finished scaling the elephant and are now on top of Zo. And Frankie and Robin and Brooke had actually all stayed at the summit, prepared to stop them from getting up there, because they knew that if they arrived in town, then the people of Zo would be upset and might do something terrible. But they all fell asleep before they actually arrived.
See, it was such a cool moment in theory. Like, I love them standing over it and being like, it looks like us adults are going to have to keep this in control. And you're like, normally two of you guys in this group are the ones who are like the biggest weirdos and idiots, but like in this moment,
I mean,
you're
look
like,
at Frankie. His hair is a whale.
His hair is a whale in honor of Zo. But it is like, oh yeah, these are the adults. They're gonna be the ones to make sure that this very sensitive political situation doesn't crumble apart. And all three of them just fell asleep at the same time. How does that happen?
Even fucking Robin.
Like, the most responsible of the group. The one who you assumed probably stayed up the latest of all of them was still like, I can wake them up. I mean, literally don't even have to move. I can make arms to wake them. I'm hoping, like, somebody, like, walked by and, like, just sprinkled, like, sleeping dust on them or something, because it really makes these guys look kind of lazy.
So Kinemon and Kanjuro have shown up, and they're there with the monkey who knocked them down in the first place. And Kinemon, you know, leans down and is like, oh, monkey fellow, you have told us nothing yet. I only seek a warrior known as Raizo. And immediately he dashes off and going, I don't know. And so Kinemon and Kanjuro chase after him while he goes to alert the people of Zo. Oh, I must report this at once. It's appalling. It's bananas.
He is a...
It's samurai.
A wacky little thing, you know?
He's a monkey.
Yeah, he has an ape gimmick. He'll say a bunch of ape. Although the other gorilla we met, I feel like did the same thing. Very briefly we met one in like the first chapter they got to Zo, so maybe that's just a monkey thing in the kingdom. You make a bunch of monkey ape related puns.
And Cat Viper also did the I love lasagna.
Lasagna. One thing I've kind of forgotten and only recently was reminded of. I don't know if you remember Lola from back in Thriller Bark. She had like fake lips and like a sword. Didn't use a sword, but anyway, she had like a warthog that her spirit had been trapped in. She was Big Mom's daughter, one of them.
Oh.
And at the time, after everything was done, she gave Nami a Vivi card with Big Mom's location and said, I feel very confident that should you ever need help in the new world, my mother would help you.
I don't remember this at all.
I had to kind of read up and remind myself on it because it's been a while, but I'm kind of interested to see about that.
Hmm. So maybe this whole confrontation with Big Mom won't go down as badly as it's being built up. Hmm.
Or maybe that's just another in they have. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, it was an alright chapter of One Piece again. But it's just like, it was alright, you know. Toriko! Chapter 357, what was it? The creature known as Neo. That was it. Okay. It's backstory for Neo. I know that this chapter is supposed to be about how creepy and disgusting and terrifying Neo is, but everything, because basically, Gigi is you know, going on and is like, you know, millions of years ago, you know, the Nitro have been cultivating Earth for 5 billion years. They would cultivate planets and they would stress them. They do it with the Earth, with the Gourmet Eclipse, but they used to do it with exploitation through demons. They would use fear, despair, and anxiety, the fear of death, to stress the creatures of the planet that they were raising and cultivating. And one of the demons, known as Beneficial Beasts, was Neo, but he was scrawny and weak. But then he got left behind one time, just like E.T., essentially. Then he
started... There was one shithead.
Yeah, he just started terrorizing all the greens, and he starts off smelling just like, you know, like, drools, like, boiling oil into, like, an anthill, and then starts gobbling them up. And then he's like, finds a brontosaurus and just, like, latches onto it and starts licking it and biting it and eating it. And I know that this is to be like, oh, you know, it was ravenous. It would just terrorize creatures until they were at the brink of death, you know, almost scared to death, and then it would eat them. And I'm just like, this thing looks like a pussy. Like, not a literal pussy. It's just like, how are you supposed to be scared of this thing? You can step on it and kill it.
It's such a big nose. It's like Adam Driver if you shaved him off all of his hair.
Like, because it tries to take on this Brontosaurus thing, and Brontosaurus is like, what the fuck is this thing? And he starts, like, trying to shake its bite to get it off. He's bashing against the wall and stuff. And he's like, oh, this thing's trying to bite me now. And it breathes fire on the thing. It's like, just step on it. Kill it.
Apparently you can. It survives.
It's like, I know that it's like, oh, it's super powerful and immortal and stuff. It's like, it doesn't look the least bit intimidating. It looks a little bit creepy. But even in the very last, you know, huge two-based brain was like, sucking in eyes and stuff. It's like, it still looks like, just punch it. Poke its eyes out.
I don't want you in
grab it by its, grab it by its giant nose and, like, swing it around. It doesn't look the least bit intimidating. This little wuss is supposed to be, like, the ultimate force of evil power, brah. Terrorizing everything, devouring everything. It's just like, oh, the nightmare has only just begun. What kind of nightmares do you suffer from? You get chased around by big-nosed little shrimps.
Some people have them. People find children scary at points, Nick.
It doesn't look like a child. It looks like a frail old man.
You know what? Maybe there's someone out there who can give us some info. Or someone who's like, I have a phobia of spindly men with giant noses. And I'm like, coming from Germany, I'm not going to trust this one.
Gelly Olsen in the jet is like, Nick's the first guy that dies in horror movies.
They're like, why don't we just punch Neo? And I'm like, how ironic, he ate him with chocolate.
he got the brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart out and then toasted it before he... Oh, God. You'd be freaked out if a naked old wrinkly man was constantly following you. Maybe, but the way it's
licking
drawn doesn't look
to.
The way that it's drawn doesn't look intimidating or scary is the point that I'm trying to make. Like, as the audience, it doesn't look creepy. Well, it looks a little creepy, but it doesn't look scary to me.
I don't, you know, and this might be an unpopular opinion, I don't really think Shimabukuro's art lends itself well to horror.
Nah, probably
creepy.
Not.
I can see why someone would find this intimidating. It's not intimidating, it's just kind of gross, I guess, because it looks mm-hmm. like it's covered in, like, boils and pus and shit like that. But even then, it's not disturbing to me. Like, I can stare at this image and not be bothered by it, you know?
I think that the eyes, like, the sunken-in eyes are supposed to look creepy, but it's just like, I look at them and it's like, eh, whatever. I don't care.
This doesn't do it for me, but, yeah. I know I've heard other people who have thought it's, you know, a very intimidating image. So, to that, you know, more power to you. But for me, I'm just like, eh. I mean, I kind of like Neo's backstory. He's like, I just kind of go places and fuck shit up by eating everything.
And Chikali makes the point of, well, that was one of the reasons why, you know, the Nitro treated him as unimportant and left him behind, because he was this little runt. I get that, but then you're supposed to take that and then make it, you know, scary.
We might get that later on. You know what I took most from this chapter? That the Nitros are fucking incompetent.
Like, yeah, just leave them behind.
It's really kind of almost like a secret comedy chapter. And maybe that's intentional, because that's kind of Shimabukuro's style, is to make hidden jokes within
it. At the most inappropriate moment, he just throws in a poop joke all of a sudden.
If you listen to their plan, they're like, well, we'll just leave this asshole behind because he's fucking useless. And then they all come back to the plan and they're like, oh, shit. We really fucked this one up. We really screwed the pooch on this one, guys.
I mean, that is the point.
It's just kind of funny when I think about it, and that's why I find the chapter more amusing than anything else. Like, these Nitros suck.
Okay. Okay, let's close on World Trigger. Chapter 130, Galapala, Part 9. Last time, Futaba used her Marth final smash technique, but ended up getting her legs cut up because Yomi, who's controlling the special neighbor, used the incredible technique of holding something in the way of her path to get her. And she tries to act all, you know, tough and determined. It's like, oh, I'll just use the scanda again in order to get him. And Ghidorah talks her down by saying, you know, our enemy handled you very well.
You have to save that for the bonus plot.
No, I don't.
Okay, fair enough.
But basically, she just talks down, like, you know, come on, we've got to handle the situation calmly, because we can't afford you to just, you know, do the same thing, expecting a different result, basically. And she remembers her captain, you know, Kako, entrusting her with taking on this thing. She's like, okay, yeah. So, yay! Maturity, I guess.
It is, like, a nice moment that Ghidorah shows up. Because it's one of the few people on board that she's older than, too. Because I believe the girl she's with, whose name I've forgotten because we haven't known her a whole lot, is actually the youngest member of Border. Or maybe not. I think Midori Kawa might be the youngest, but I think she's like right around this time. Or right around his age. So it's just kind of nice seeing her being a responsible leader.
So we cut to Nasu Squad taking on Windsaw. Girl fight! So...
You know, actually thinking about this... This is a chapter predominantly of female characters, because it starts off
then it started
with Kanaa, Ghidorah, and other girl. And then moves on to Nasu and Wen and Kumagai, who I only know because I'm looking at the chapter intro, which features all three of their names.
So the big thing that happens is that Windsaw starts using this technique called Servitora, or Straw Soldiers. And basically just summons a bunch of doubles of herself before rushing in. And this freaks out Nasu and Kuma briefly. But they quickly figure out that only one of them is real. The others are just, you know, illusions. So they contact Sayoko, their operator, and like, which one's the real one? And she's like, I can't tell. There are multiple try-on readings. So Nasu is like, whatever. I'll just shoot them all. He just starts blasting through them. But the images aren't actually disappearing, it looks like. Yeah, that's right. I remember what happened, so. The images aren't disappearing, so he's like, okay, I mean, only one of them is real, but, you know, how are we supposed to, you know, tell? I mean, I'm just going to be wasting try-on trying to hit them like this. So then Nasa's like, okay, let's back into the hallway when we'll bottleneck this so that you can't, you know, you get an advantage that way. But then suddenly, Kumagai does this, gets attacked by this weird, I guess... She just rushes at her multiple times? Because I can't imagine she summons a bunch of blades like this. But, you know, just attacks her from all angles, and Kumagai gets pretty heavily wounded. But then she notices a shadow on the ground and looks up and sees that there are all of these floating duplicate triggers flying up in the air, which Nasu realizes that Windsaw must have put up there when she first got in the smokescreen. So Nasu starts shooting them out of the air, and Windsaw basically is like, okay, I gotta finish this quickly before I run out of duplicates. And so it's kind of a race between Nasu trying to destroy her projectors before Windsaw can take down Kumagai. And Kumagai is trying to figure out, like, okay, well, alright, so the base one has, you know, actually moves, and then the dummies are just, you know, reflections of it. Let's see. Well, oh, I remember. She had a body. She had a mark on the right side of her chest before she multiplied. So the real one is the second from the right, because that's the one that's different from the others. And then all of a sudden, she gets a...
It's the far right!
Oh, come on.
Oh, it's Kikuchi Kar. Sounds like Edwin.
So she instead shifts her target, takes out the real one, and fucking... Well, no, that's not what happens. She gets struck really hard and gets knocked away. And yeah, Kikujihara just like, I'm here to save the day!
My ears! Saved everybody, don't you know?
So, yeah. Nasu then is like, every scar you left on Kuma, I'll return them back to you all at once. And I fucking love this image, because it's just, you know, Nasu with one arm casting her other arm out and sending this fucking vortex of bullets up from the ground through Windsaw's chest. It is so cool looking.
When World Trigger eventually gets a fighting game, I can't wait for the final, like, ultimate attacks and shit like that that's in it, because that's awesome.
When you build up enough momentum or whatever, and then you have your big cinematic sequence, and you're just like, I'll return all the ones at once!
Yeah, the level 3 attack. Because that's what... Look, it's necessary as shit. I feel like there was a lot of extravagance built into making that look as awesome as it is. You didn't need. But goddammit, do I appreciate the theatrics.
So, one of the members of Galapala has been defeated. That's actually, like, the first one in this whole thing. It seems like it's like, an actual win for Border 2. And Kuma basically analyzes what happened, because, like, so she used her transformation trigger to switch left and right in order to camouflage the real one. Okay. So, yeah, basically, like, she just reflected one of the doubles and reflected herself. So it was like, you thought that was the real one. But then Kukuchira was like... This is what happens when you only rely on your eyes. You can easily tell by listening to a step.
You made him so much gayer all of a sudden.
My ears help!
My ears there, Thayla!
Oh, God. It looks like Kumagai is basically going to be down for the count. But they're all like, okay, well, we won. Let's take this intruder into custody. And Winsaw is kind of like, well, I did the best that I could. I held four of them down. But it seems as though, yeah, we're going to have another prisoner.
Well, not necessarily. I'm
right,
skeptical.
Right, they haven't successfully captured her yet, so it's possible she could get away still.
I feel like, what was his name, Yomi, the operator? I feel like there has to be some contingency plan for if they went down there. Because she went into this fight not expected to take out Border. Their entire plan's not to defeat Border. They're just here to destroy the away ship and get out. So I imagine there's some method they use, a bailout or something that acts like some kind of escape mechanism. I don't know, maybe she won't be able to, maybe they'll prevent it, but I imagine there's something like that. And in a way, she actually did kind of win. Because
She took out one agent.
Kumagai and Nasu are essentially done. I mean, Nasu's not defeated, but she's essentially defeated. She's all but having to bail out, because her arm's cut off, she doesn't have much Trion left at all. She even kind of mentions, like, I'm just about out of Trion. And I don't think that big spectacular attack she did really kind of was conservative to her reserves. So in that way, she did take out two members and kind of held them up. So she defeated, she was beaten, but in a way, she kind of accomplished what her part of the mission was, so... I like that it's kind of a win in both directions. And I know a lot of people are saying, like, oh, you know what this really is? This is a Yuri chapter in disguise, because this is all about Nasu and Kuma. Or, what's her name?
Kuma.
Kuma, yeah. Kind of secretly, you know, I'll leave every scar on it you inflicted on Kuma. I can't see that, guys, if for one reason only. I can't see two people falling in love who have the exact same hairstyles. It's never going to work. I'd be like, every day, I'd be like, one of us is going to have to change, because this cannot work. That's my big issue with this. I'm like, they have the same hair!
Wow. Okay.
I love this chapter, though. I love this chapter.
That's the end of the recap, so let's do our favorites for this week. My series of the week is World Trigger. I felt that it was a fairly weak week for Jump, like I said at the start of the episode, but I really liked this chapter. And I think that moment alone where Nasu strikes the final blow is reason enough for this to be my chapter of the week. And there's some other moments besides that that make it good. So.
Road Trick was really, really good this week. I think overall, I ultimately... had more fun with My Hero Academia, at least the conclusion, and I really just liked the way that ended. So I'm gonna go with that one, though this was a hard consideration for me. But I went with My Hero ultimately.
And I actually had the second time I read through the chapter, I was like, who the fuck's gonna be my weekly MVP? I thought about doing Nasu, but she has the one baddest one, but that's really it, you know? It certainly wasn't going to be Upside Down Cross Earring Guy.
Are you sure?
Despite the amount of time I spent talking about. Certainly wasn't going to be anyone from Bleach, because they all seem like idiots.
I almost gave it to Chad. I strongly considered it. I was like,
come
on!
Line. He had a good line.
He's never going to get another chance.
certainly wasn't going to make it Neo for Toriko. No one from One Piece really in particular stood out, because it was more
you mean Robin, Brooke, and Frankie falling asleep didn't get your MVP?
No, because it's, you know, just kind of a transitional and silly chapter there. My Hero Academia, I didn't really feel like giving it to Deku. I guess, you know, now that we've talked about it, I could have given it to Dobby, but not really. But what I thought about it was, like, I really liked Wall in this chapter, because he had a badass fight with Laxus, and that transformation he does, I think he looks so fucking cool. And I like the build-up where he's like, okay, I've been analyzing this the whole time, and if I keep on fighting the way that I have, I could make a mistake that he could exploit and defeat me. So I'm going to actually take the necessary steps to defeat him by changing my personality, because I'm a robot. And then he just transforms his body, gets this big grill across his face, and is like, second form, motherfucker! Or, like, fourth form, considering the amount of times he's transformed. So, I really liked Wall. That's going to be my guy.
Fair enough. My weekly MVP is Nasu, though. I thought she was particularly memorable in this. I didn't have much of an impression of her going into this, but now I'm like, if there's ever a World Trigger fighting game, she's the first character I'm fucking picking, so I can, well, actually Kitora first, then Osamu, then it's her, so I can see her third level special once I've learned enough of the game to activate it, you know? I need to actually learn how I activate, you know? But I love that, and I you know what? For as much as I made the joke about it, I do kind of like that it does go forward with the relationship with her and Kuma a little bit, you know. Not necessarily saying it's a ship tease, although it very heavily is, but I'm not saying that's necessarily what I enjoy about it. I just like that it shows their camaraderie through it, and just her kind of conviction, and like, I'm going to do everything you did to my friend, and I'm going to make it fucking spectacular, bitch. Yeah, that two-page spread alone is enough for it, so I thought it was a really great showcase for her.
Someone in the chat brought up Aizawa being very practical in his information gathering. Yeah, it was pretty badass, too. It was like, I will break your arm, you know? So, but, I gotta go for, I went for Wall, you went for Nasu, and our audience chose World Trigger as well, so World Trigger was quite popular this week. Alright, yeah, we are done for this week. In record time, it seems like, because we actually kept it under 2 hours with some time to spare. But thank you, everyone, for joining us here on Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show generally on hitbox.tv/RLOT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sometimes, however, we do need to change things up. Schedules, you know, get screwed up and stuff. So you can follow us on Twitter for updates. He's at RLOT. I'm at YRuler of Time. And we are also at WMR Podcast. You can check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. Also check them out on iTunes and on YouTube. Subscribe to all that stuff.
Yes, please do. And I actually didn't get my iTunes open in time, unfortunately. Okay.
Make sure to also leave a comment or a rating so that we can beat the woodworking podcasts and stuff.
Please do. I can't. Every day I wake up and the woodworkers are beating me at something else in life, and I just can't take it anymore. It's what keeps me up at night. Like, I was just sitting there, like, somewhere out there there's a woodworker who's so happy that his podcast is the top 100. And God, I just want him to get hit by a car.
A car made of metal and plastic, not wood.
Yeah, no wood in it at all.
Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to do all kinds of cool stuff and create bonus content for you guys to enjoy. This weekend, we should be doing our February Q&A episode, so watch out for that. We're planning on doing that Saturday night, currently.
I thought it was Sunday.
That was Saturday. That was Saturday.
You probably are right, and we'll say Saturday.
Okay, we're going to do Saturday, right?
I don't know why.
Oh, no, wait. No, you said Sunday. You said Sunday around, like, 4 p.m. Okay.
I can do it either day. Sunday or Saturday. 4 p.m. You decide right now, Nick.
No, Sunday. Okay.
Sunday we'll be doing the Q&A podcast then.
Okay. Anyhow. Sunday. Where was I? I lost my train of thought. Here we go. Special thanks go out to Steve Manor, Takaris. You can check out his work in a billion different places. NarokFanboy.DeviantArt. Audrey Boobs at Tumblr. Patreon.com/Steve Manor. And also special thanks go out to Infamous Planet for all the help that you have done for our podcast, including making this awesome frame thing.
Oh,
I didn't even pause for this time, so I hope that you didn't. Did he leave an image? We can't keep having this, Nick, mostly because I can't be bothered to just call it true.
Also, just want to give a real quick mention to Michael Talley and Corey Riley, who are our newest patrons. Thank you very much to both of you. It is greatly appreciated.
All right. Yeah, that's going to do it. Thank you everyone for joining us. We will have Kagami no Shirai. Snow White of the red hair, scarlet hair, whatever. I don't remember. I don't even remember either title. I just remember
Snow White with the red hair, I believe, is the way it is. It's the weirdest title. Like, it's completely normal-esque series, but I just assume off the name it's going to be like Crimsons, where you're like, yeah, it's about salmon fucking fish, right? Why else would it have like such a weird title? I'm like, it's not weird. It's just the language of it, the syntax is all wrong. Snow White with the red hair. I'm like, why don't you just call it Red-Haired Snow White? They're like, well, fuck you. How about that, buddy? And I'm like, look, I'm not arguing with the personification of a manga on the internet. I can't do this again. I've had to start tempering myself from engaging with conversations with some people because I'm like, I'm 27 years old. I cannot have another goddamn argument about Arrow on the internet with people. I can't do it anymore, Nick.
I have a life now.
I don't know if I do, but I just can't let this be what I become. I can't do this anymore. Someone has to stop me. At some point, I have to sit here and say, I can't subscribe to this anymore. All right. That gets it, everybody.